Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, March 28th, 2021. My name is Trevor and I will be bringing you the Sioux City Journal for today. So today let's take a quick look at our 5-day forecast for the Siouxland area. For today, we can expect things to be sunny, which is a nice break, and the winds will be kind of mild at about 6 to 12 miles per hour. We're looking at a high of 61 degrees. Tonight it'll be clear, the winds will be about 8 to 16 miles per hour, and we'll have a low of 44 degrees. Monday, it'll be sunny, windy, and warmer. We'll have a high of 73, a low of 34. Tuesday, it'll be cooler, breezy in the morning. We'll have a high of 47 and a low of 22. Wednesday, it'll be mostly sunny with, again, winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 49 and a low of 26. Thursday, it'll be sunny, pleasant, and milder. We're looking at a high of 58 and a low of 38. Now let's go to the front page story. Front page stories, and first we'll do the mini editorial at the bottom of the page, which this one comes courtesy of David Harris of Sioux City, and he writes, quote, "I'm confused. Gun rights before life and free speech before life and means you're pro-life." I'll read that again because I guess it's a little kind of hard to understand. "I'm confused. Gun rights before life and free speech before life and means you're pro-life, ?" That's courtesy of David Harris of Sioux City. All right, looking to the front page spreads, we look to Sioux City Wartime Service. We look to two veterans from the Korean War in the area. Headline, Siouxland Anniversary. Subheadline, Air Guard Unit Activated for Korean War 70 Years Ago. From Sioux City. Many had served in one war just a few years earlier. Now the men of a newly formed Air National Guard unit in Sioux City were facing the possibility of going to war again. For some young pilots like Warren Bud Nelson, who served during World War II but never left the country, the activation of the 174th Fighter Squadron for the Korean War was not a totally unwelcome event. Quote, "In those times, you kind of had a feeling of wanting to be with it. You didn't want to be left out," end quote, the Jackson, Minnesota native said. Members of the 174th, the predecessor of the Sioux City-based 185th Air Refueling Wing today, wasn't left out. Nearly 70 years ago, on April 1, 1951, the unit was mobilized for the Korean War, one of 486 Air National Guard units to get the call. It wasn't a surprise. The 174th had been notified months earlier of the April 1st activation date, and units across the country already had been mobilized. Quote, "The biggest thing was they were figuring out where we would go," said Dwayne McCallum, a Sioux City native who had joined the Guard in 1947 and was in supply. The 174th was sent to Bangor, Maine to reopen a former World War II airbase and begin training. Training for what, they weren't sure, but McCallum, now 90, remembers he wasn't too worried about being sent to war. Quote, "There never was any indication we were going to Korea," he said. As a unit, they didn't deploy to Korea. Some members were assigned to fill in with other units that were sent to all parts of the United States, and some were sent overseas. The majority of them wound up in Alexandria, Louisiana, where they spent the final months of deployment until being deactivated in late 1952. None of the 174th pilots flew in Korea either, though a few served on the front lines of the Cold War in Europe rather than in Asia. While the 174th was in Maine, Nelson, now 95, was among a handful of pilots from Sioux City chosen for a new mission, the 20th Fighter Bomb Wing. They were sent to special training at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. From there, they went to do top secret atomic bomb training in New Mexico. Then it was on to Europe in May. Quote, "By the time it was pretty well figured out, we were a show of force," Nelson said. In their new F-84G Thunderjets, Nelson and the other pilots flew along the German border, becoming familiar with the terrain and location of potential targets behind the Iron Curtain. Quote, "We were flying missions that gave us an introduction to Europe and get acquainted so we could find a target if we had to," Nelson said. Their jets were outfitted to carry an atomic bomb, though they never did carry the weapon during any of their flights. In a 2010 interview with the Journal, Nelson and fellow 174th pilots Dick Solsbach and Gordon Young said their jets carried an atomic bomb look-alike during missions. The American pilots were there to send a message to the Russians that the United States was watching and prepared to strike if necessary. If ordered, Nelson or any of the pilots would have delivered a nuclear bomb to a target behind the Iron Curtain, a mission he said in 2010 would have been a one-way flight. Fortunately, they never had to undertake such a mission, and Nelson and his fellow 174th members returned to Sioux City in December of 1952 without encountering any Russian resistance in the air. Home again, both Nelson and McCollum eventually became full-time Guard members and spent their careers with the Sioux City unit. Nelson worked his way up the ranks, earning a promotion to colonel and serving as the 185th Wing Commander from April 1976 until his retirement in May 1980. A year after rejoining the Guard, McCollum became the base photographer in 1953, a job that enabled him to document the history of the unit through his camera lens until he retired in 1985. Quote, getting back and becoming the photographer for Sioux City, I couldn't have a better job, he said. All right, returning back to the front page, local interest story headline, vaccines offered to 18 and up. This is from South Sioux City, Nebraska. Some Nebraska pharmacies, including four in northeast Nebraska, will begin offering COVID-19 vaccinations to anyone 18 years or older on Monday. The pharmacies that will be offering the vaccines are in the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program, a federal-state collaboration to increase vaccine access. Under a recent update to the state's directed health measures, pharmacies that are in the program will be able to give the vaccine to residents regardless of their occupation, health status, or other factors. The state also allocates vaccines on a weekly basis to local health departments. The Dakota County Health Department and the Northeast Nebraska Public Health Department announced this past week that residents 18 and older were eligible for a shot through the health department, though people over age 65 and healthcare workers are a higher priority. Pharmacies in Northeast Nebraska that will be offering vaccines to anyone 18 and over include the following from a list provided by the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. First location, Walmart at 1601 Cornusker Drive in South Sioux City. Next is Providence Medical Center at 803 Providence Road, Suite 101 in Wayne, Nebraska. Next is Wisner Apothecary in 1024 Avenue, Suite 100 in Pender, Nebraska. And finally, Emerson Apothecary at 1003 South Main Street, Suite 2, Emerson, Nebraska. Dakota County, Nebraska is about 12.8% fully vaccinated according to DHHS data, while the four-county area encompassing Cedar, Dixon, Thurston, and Wayne counties is almost 19.5% vaccinated. Woodbury County, meanwhile, has made strides in getting shots in people's arms. Roughly 15.1% of the county's residents are now vaccinated, according to a review of Iowa Department of Public Health data. Plymouth County, just to the north, is doing better than many of its neighbors. Approximately 24.2% of the county is now vaccinated. In neighboring Sioux County, almost 16.3% are vaccinated. In Monona County, 15.6% are vaccinated. In Ida County, 17.8%. In Cherokee County, 21.2%. In O'Brien County, almost 20%. In Lyon County, almost 13.7%. In Osceola County, 16.4%. In Dickinson County, almost 24.9%. In Clay County, 16.9%. In Buena Vista County, 24.2%. And in Sac County, almost 21.7%. The pace of vaccination remains somewhat slow in Union County, South Dakota, where only 8.3% of residents are fully vaccinated, compared to 15.6% in neighboring Clay County and almost 21.4% in Yankton County, according to South Dakota Department of Health data. Unity Point St. Luke's this week reported how effective the vaccines have been for employees there. A chart the Sioux City Hospital provided shows that infections among staffers there peaked around December 20th when 40 of them had the virus. Vaccinations for healthcare workers got underway around the same time as the peak in infections. By February 21st, there was only one St. Luke staffer who had the virus. So, it looks like we have some good news finally on the vaccine front and the COVID front after what it feels like sometimes months of bringing our listeners bad news, it's nice to have some good news on that front. So may that progress continue. Okay, let's now turn to the inside section, page A2 of today's paper, where it looks at kind of the legislative activity over in Des Moines in the capital, the Iowa State House and House and Senate. Headline for this article, Reckoning Comes This Week for Some Iowa Legislative Ideas. Subheadline, Grim Reaper Looms Over Traffic Camera Ban, comma, Bottle Bill Changes. From Des Moines. It's do or die week in the Iowa legislature. Friday marks the second, quote, final deadline, which means policy bills that do not involve budgeting or taxation issues must be passed in either the House or Senate and clear a standing committee in the other chamber to remain eligible for further consideration this legislative session. There are some exceptions, but generally issues that have stalled due to lack of support or lower priority status likely will find their way to the State House recycling bin by week's end, barring some 11th hour maneuvering as lawmakers work to in anticipation of adjoining by their April 30th target. Bills currently being shadowed by the legislative Grim Reaper include measures designed to ban most traffic enforcement cameras and faculty tenure at Regent universities, make daylight savings time Iowa's year-round time, lower the penalty for possessing marijuana, bar employers from mandating COVID-19 vaccinations, override presidential executive orders and sanction left lane, quote, campers who refuse to drive in the slower lane of traffic. Quote, we're still trying to sort through all of those bills, says Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitver, Republican of Ankeny. Quote, and I still have members lobbying for or against all of those bills, so I don't feel entirely comfortable right now saying what's dead or what's alive. Some of these, when it gets to the last minute, it's because there is resistance at different points, end quote. House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, said most of the majority of GOP priority bills are advancing along with Governor Kim Reynolds' initiatives to expand broadband, housing opportunities, and ethanol fuel consumption. But he had concerns some House passed measures to promote child care access and affordability have stalled in the Senate, and both he and Whitver wondered if longstanding issues around Iowa's bottle deposit law will see another year of stalemate. The House Speaker, appearing on Iowa's PBS's Iowa Press, said legislators are trying to, quote, force competing interests to end the finger-pointing that plagued bottle bill changes and negotiate a solution that may not please everyone. For instance, he said, if food stores don't want to deal with returned empty cans and bottles, they may have to contract with other businesses to handle them, meaning that in those cases, consumers would have to go somewhere besides the grocery store to redeem empties. Quote, if anything is going to happen with the bottle bill, Grassley noted, the legislator has to make a decision what's best for our constituents, what's best for the long-term viability of the program, and just go forward, and the folks in the industry may not love the solution, but at some point, we're just going to have to do it. Whitver said there was a number of bills with a number of different approaches that have been introduced to address problems with Iowa's nickel deposit law, but the various players have not been able to, quote, narrow down a preferred path with session time starting to slip away. Quote, a lot of times you have 12 different ideas, you don't really have any, he said. At this point, I haven't seen any sort of movement towards one particular idea. Senator Brad Zaun, Republican of Urbandale, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said the 2021 session has been, quote, different because many issues saw quick action due to concern another COVID-19 outbreak might interrupt proceedings like last year. While things are less frantic as the final deadline approaches, he expects a busy week of debate, subcommittee, and committee meetings. Quote, here we go once again. We're getting down to the wire, Zaun said Thursday. I've gotten calls all day from House members wanting me to run their bills in the Senate. I expect to be treated the same way. Zaun says he hasn't given up on the traffic camera ban, but conceded the prospect for Senate File 516 were not good to win full Senate passage and get it through a House committee in time this week. Quote, I know time is getting kind of tight, he said. Quote, it's getting late. I'm saying the prognosis of passing this and keeping it alive is probably very small. The bill would ban automated traffic law enforcement cameras statewide, except the speed cameras around the S-curve on Interstate 380 in Cedar Rapids. Zaun said the same probably was true for other bills he had championed, ending faculty tenure at Regent universities, making daylight savings time permanent, and allowing college athletes to be compensated for use of the name of their name, image, or likeness. But he held out hope his colleagues would approve measures giving more time to bring criminal and civil actions against pedophiles who sexually abuse minors by eliminating Iowa's statute of limitations on criminal and civil actions involving the sexual abuse of children. House passed bills seeking constitutional and statutory action to restore voting rights to people with felony convictions who have served their sentences and repaid all restitution may not see Senate action this year, Zaun said. House members said they plan to take up legislation dealing with qualified immunity and other protections for law enforcement officers, but make changes to what the Senate sent them. An issue on both House and Senate debate calendars that likely will survive the funnel is a legislation that would place a hard $1 million cap on non-economic damages that can be awarded by Iowa juries in medical malpractice cases. The House is expected to debate House File 592 this week. Two bills seeking to ban the use of handheld electronic devices while driving likely will be placed on unfinished business in both chambers, a maneuver that circumvents the funnel for the time being. Another legislative procedure to make a bill, quote, funnel-proof occurred with Senate File 580, a measure that under which high-tech companies like Facebook, Google, and Microsoft would be denied future state and local tax breaks if they were found by a court to have illegally stifled speech or certain viewpoints on social media. Because the bill deals with taxation issues, it would be converted to a House Ways and Means Committee bill that is exempt from the funnel rules. Even though bills may die because they failed to clear the deadline, state House veterans caution that issues can never be considered completely discarded until the final adjournment gavel falls. For instance, a long-standing battle over legalizing dove hunting in Iowa took an unexpected twist during the 2011 session. A Senate bill dealing with raccoon hunting became a flashpoint when House members substituted it with dove hunting language that then made a speedy trek to then-Governor Terry Branstad's desk for a signature into law. Likewise, Republicans last June took a bill dealing with life-saving medical support for children and mandated it to establish a 24-hour waiting period for an abortion in Iowa that was approved by both chambers and signed by Reynolds. Democrats, who are outnumbered 18-32 in the Senate and 41-59 in the House, expressed concerns Republicans have embarked on a divisive agenda dealing with issues to expand access to guns, restrict access to certain health care options, and weaken public education with bills like House-passed charter schools expansion that is slanted for Senate committee action this week. Quote, we still haven't seen any real COVID-19 relief move out of the General Assembly at this time, said Senate Democratic leader Zach Wallace of Coraville. He pushed for Senate approval of a House-passed bipartisan package exempting federal paycheck protection loans and grants to businesses and unemployment insurance benefits from state income tax. However, Wiver was noncommittal on the tax relief measure, saying the entire focus of the GOP Senate is to press ahead on tax changes that would compress state income tax brackets, lower rates, and eliminate federal deductibility. To do that, lawmakers would need to abandon the, quote, triggers they set in 2018 that dictate the financial thresholds that have to be met before state taxes could be cut further. A separate measure would deliver $100 million in property tax relief by shifting mental health costs from local tax levies to state general fund appropriations. Quote, these are really good tax ideas. Our focus is on those pieces of policies. We're going to continue to push those, the Senate leader said. Against the funnel backdrop and then in the spirit of NCAA March Madness college basketball tournament, Matt Sinovic, executive director of Progress Iowa, issued its, quote, extreme 16 bracket that matched up what the group considered to be the most extreme proposals of the 2021 legislative session. The group ranked Senate File 413, a bill that shortened early and general election day voting times and made other changes to Iowa's voting system as its number one seed. Reynolds signed that bill into law on March 8th. The group ranked the permit less carry gun bill, Senate File 535, currently on Reynolds' desk awaiting action, as Progress Iowa's number two seed. Quote, the competition for this year's Extreme 16 was unfortunately one of the strongest we've ever seen, said Senevic. Gutting public schools, making it harder for Iowa families to get by, legalizing discrimination, and preventing Iowans from voting are just a few of the top seeds in this year's bracket. To make matters even worse, Republicans-controlled legislator barely lifted a finger to help Iowans who are still suffering 1 year into the pandemic. Whitford said the 2021 session is entering its final month with tax policies and fiscal 2022 state budget decisions moving front and center, with Monday marking the 78th day of a session slated to run 110 days. Quote, there's no reason we need to go beyond 110 days, said Whitford. Quote, in fact, with the Republican trifecta control of the House, Senate, and governorship trying to push conservative ideas through in the last few weeks, there's no reason we need to even get to 110 days. A lot of it will come down to that budget negotiations and, frankly, the tax conversation, end quote. Legislative Republicans expect to make, quote, a significant investment in expanded broadband in Iowa. Grassley pegged it Friday at $100 million, finalizing a state general fund budget that will top $8 billion for the first time. Also, Whitver said the 89th General Assembly is putting forth, quote, generational ideas, providing income and property tax relief, phasing out the state's inheritance tax while maintaining, quote, a very sustainable budget, with surplus reserves against the backdrop of a deadly pandemic. Quote, I think this could be an extremely successful year, he said. I know Senate Republicans have put forth generational ideas that are really going to move the state forward. I think when it's all said and done, we are on pace to have a very successful year, end quote. All right, we will now turn to page A5, the Week in Iowa briefs. First one in the news, headline, prison staffers killed. Two inmates used prison hammers to kill a nurse and a correctional officer in a failed attempt to escape from the Anamosa State Penitentiary, state officials said. Nurse Lorena Schult, 50, and Officer Robert McFarland, 46, died of blunt force trauma to the head. McKinley Roby, an inmate who tried to help Schult and McFarland, was also hit in the head, but survived and is being treated at University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City. Remains found. Human remains were found in a pond near a rural area near DeWitt, about 20 miles north of Davenport, where authorities have been investigating the disappearance of a 10-year-old girl since last summer. Constitutional carry passes. Legislation that would eliminate a requirement that Iowans obtain a permit to acquire or carry handguns and loosen other state restrictions is headed to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk following Senate passage Monday on a 30-17 party line vote. Mental health funding. A Senate subcommittee started work on a massive property tax revamp that gradually would shift the cost of mental health services from Iowa's 99 counties to the state and phase out the $152 million, quote, backfill to cities, counties, and school. In the news. Also, charter school bill passes. The Iowa House Republicans approved a proposed expansion of the state's charter school program. The legislation will permit the foundation of public charter schools by individuals or groups other than a local school board. Republicans who approve the measure said it will provide an alternative to public schools, which will foster innovation and experimentation. Democrats, who were united in opposition to the bill, said it threatens to cause financial damage to public schools. Iowa currently has two charter schools operating. Back the Blue Bill. House Republicans advanced a bill that would criminalize shining a laser in the light of in a peace officer's eyes, prohibit blocking roadways as part of demonstrations, and prevent cities from telling law enforcement to stop enforcing the law. Grassley on gun safety. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, said he was hopeful Democrats and Republicans could work together to make bipartisan, common-sense progress on gun control, but he said the U.S. House passed legislation did not fit that bill. Felon voting. The Iowa House restarted the process of amending the state's constitution to say felons who complete their sentences are then eligible to vote. Similar legislation stalled last year, so Governor Kim Reynolds restored felon voting rights via executive order. From the odds and ends, Iowa's stimulus share. Iowa governments are in line for more than $4.4 billion in federal COVID-19 relief money under a nationwide $1.9 trillion package, according to a preliminary analysis issued by the state's nonpartisan legislative services agency. Waiting for maps. A top state house Republican has suggested the state sue the U.S. Census Bureau to get data needed to complete legislative redistricting that the federal agency says won't be available until late September. Next second gentleman visit. Douglas Emhoff and USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack heard about food insecurity issues at a food bank in Des Moines. All right, let's now turn to the opinion section, page A12 of today's Sunday paper. We'll do first the editorial from the Sioux City Journal editorial board, and then we'll do letters from Siouxland Voices. From the editorial board, quote, headline, pick best qualified candidate for county treasurer from the journal editorial board. The best person for the job. That's what the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors should be seeking when looking for someone to replace County Treasurer Mike Clayton, who is retiring this week. Because there's more than a year left on the term, it shouldn't be passed like a family china, but vetted in a way that would produce great results. Last week, supervisors seemed to rule out a special election, which could cost as much as $20,000. That was wise thinking, particularly since the county could use that money in a much better way. But to handpick someone without a solid application process, which has been suggested, isn't right either. Clayton, who worked in the office some 10 years before seeking the post, had clear knowledge of the job. Since he says no one on his staff has shown an interest in moving up, he recommended Colby DeWitt, a staffer for Senator Joni Ernst. That may well be, but DeWitt also happens to be the nephew of Supervisor Chair Rocky DeWitt, which adds yet another wrinkle to the process. Supervisors would be wise to state what job qualifications requirements are, open the application process, and see who applies, Colby DeWitt included. Then, by narrowing the field to three, they can conduct interviews, weigh candidates' strengths, and determine who would be best. What complicates all of this, of course, is politics. County treasurer shouldn't be a partisan job, yet here candidates run under their party's umbrella. Knowing that the Board of Supervisors is heavily Republican, with only Mark Monson, a fill-in for Republican Jeremy Taylor, as the only one without those ties, that suggests party favoritism could be a factor. The best person could be a Democrat, but wouldn't have the clout to get the job, unless the supervisors decided to look at qualifications without requiring information about party affiliation. We believe they should open the process, interview the candidates, and, politics be damned, pick the best person. When the 2022 election rolls around, the party game can be played. Not now. Now, letters to the editor. The first letter is titled, Support Sales Tax Exemption for Iowa Food Banks. For nearly 30 years, the Food Bank of Siouxland has provided nutritious food and grocery products to nonprofit organizations and individuals in northwest Iowa. We also offer education on food insecurity to the community and those in need, and have been able to accomplish this thanks to strong community support. We are grateful that we have been able to work with all parties to guarantee people have access to food, including our federal and state legislators. Both Democrats and Republicans have come together to make hunger a bipartisan issue, especially in the past year. We need help from the state of Iowa now. Republican Sandy Salomon, along with bipartisan support from other members of the House, introduced a bill, House File 579, which will make food banks and food pantries exempt from sales tax. In the Senate, Senate Bill S-306 was introduced by Senator Jim Carlin of Sioux City and supported in a bipartisan way by other senators, which will do the same thing as House File 579. The bill is currently sitting with the Ways and Means Committee. When the sales tax exempt bill passes, food banks will save $200,000 annually. This represents 1 million meals for Iowans. When looking at the state's overall budget, this isn't a lot, but to the family who needs food, it means a lot. Please contact your state elected officials and ask them to support House File 59 and Senate Bill 306. Let's make food banks sales tax exempt. Signed, Jacob Wunderschled of Sioux City. Next letter writer writes, their letter is, Make biofuels a primary as fuel demand increases. They write, this month I joined biofuel leaders from across rural America who gathered virtually to update our lawmakers on the industry's top priorities. Organized by clean energy advocates at Growth Energy, we were privileged to meet with Iowa leaders like Representative Randy Feenstra and Senator Joni Ernst, who shared their time and continued to support for ethanol and a strong renewable fuel standard, or RFS. After one of the toughest years on records, it is critical that policymakers continue to make biofuels a priority. We're not only making cleaner, more affordable fuel, America's ethanol producers are essential suppliers of high-quality hand sanitizer, pure carbon dioxide for dry ice to transport vaccines, and other vital products. With new vaccines making the rounds and motorists returning to the roads, fuel demand is picking up, and our industry is ready to fast-track the rural economic recovery. That's why we're urging leaders to help us expand markets for higher biofuel blends and break down infrastructure barriers that limit consumer access to lower carbon options at the pump. Homegrown biofuels will play a key role in achieving America's climate goals, and they offer a solution that is available today, compatible with our existing auto fleet, and affordable for communities around the world. The path forward is clear, and together with our champions in Congress, we're excited to work with Iowa farmers to keep Americans in the driver's seat on clean energy while revitalizing the entire agricultural supply chain. All right, we will now turn to Section B, the sports section of today's paper. For professional baseball, Damek Tomsica. A headline, a successful 2020, Tomsica played for two teams from North Sioux City. For most minor league baseball players, 2020 was a wash. North High School graduate Damek Tomsica had a much different story. Tomsica spent last season playing in independent ball in Sioux Falls, then spent the winter keeping that momentum going in Australia during the Australian Baseball League. Tomsica helped the Sioux Falls Canaries get their first playoff berth in a decade, then helped the Melbourne Aces win the ABL title back in February. All that success and hard work helped Tomsica land a deal with the Minnesota Twins earlier this month. The Twins purchased the rights to the third baseman from the Birds on March 3rd. Since then, Tomsica has worked out at the United Turf and Batting Cages in North Sioux City, hoping he can get as high up the Twins ladder as he can. Tomsica will go down Wednesday to spring training in Fort Myers, Florida, and report to the Twins once the big leaguers leave camp, as the minor MILB season will now start in May at all levels. Quote, the plan is that they need help in AA and AAA for corner guys, and the scout I talked to said I'll have an upper hand because I've been playing for a whole year. I'll go down there and compete and do what I can, end quote. Of course, Tomsica had success with the Stars. He helped North to the 2009 State Baseball Championship, the program's only title. It's no secret that the COVID-19 pandemic messed up several plans for professional baseball players. The White Sox and several other teams were letting players go, and Tomsica happened to be one of them. Tomsica was in the final year of his contract with the White Sox, and the White Sox released Tomsica on June 13th. Tomsica later signed with the Canaries just 2 weeks later, just as a bunch of free agent prospects did with American Association teams. Tomsica liked the idea of being close to home too. Quote, I've got family in Sioux Falls, so I thought it would be fun for everyone around here to watch me play, Tomsica said. Quote, I know my parents really enjoyed it, and I know my little nephew came up to watch a few games. I planned on playing last year for sure, so it's either me staying in Sioux City golf or give some lessons, or it was go play and see how I can do. That propelled how I played last season. Last season in Sioux Falls got me the job with the Twins, so it all worked out. Quote, I'd say I was lucky, Tomsica said. The minor leagues are strung so much. There's so many fewer jobs, especially for older guys like myself. There's a lot of good players in independent ball, and there's even more because there are jobs hard to come by for guys in affiliated ball. Tomsica made a very good first impression with the Canaries. Tomsica made his Canaries debut on July 3rd and was 2-for-4 with a double and 3 RBIs in his debut. His 2-run double that night came in the 7th inning, and he had an RBI ground out earlier in the game. On the season, Tomsica drove in 49 runs, which led the Canaries. He also hit 3.320, hit 10 homers, and led the Canaries with 4 triples. Quote, I'm so excited for Damek to get another opportunity with a great organization in the Minnesota Twins, Canaries manager Mike Meyer said in a statement. Damek was the anchor of our lineup and put together nothing but quality at-bats and produced a bunch of big hits for us. He also played the best defensive third base I've ever seen in the birdcage, which says a lot because we've had some good ones, end quote. One of the skills Tomsica had worked on last summer was his speed. He works with Ben Oberle of United Sports Academy to work with on his agility and speed, and it immediately showed. When he came back home after spring training, Tomczyk connected with Oberle. Tomczyk started the Performance Edge program at USA, and the stars standing out noticed a positive difference right away. Quote, "It made me a little bit more explosive," Tomczyk said. "My 10-yard dash time went down a tremendous amount. When what they're doing out here as an athlete is awesome. I've played some of the best defense. I've got some balls that maybe I couldn't have. Hopefully the kids in Sioux City will take advantage of what we have out here. It could propel you to the next level." Tomczyk didn't really have any goals that he wanted to set when he went down to Australia. He wanted to enjoy the experience of playing baseball in a foreign land. He just went to go play. Quote, "I just wanted to go down there and enjoy the experience," Tomczyk said. "I didn't know my plans going forward. I thought maybe that could have been the last baseball I would play, honestly. I was going with it and I was trying to have some fun." Tomczyk has been content with the path his career has taken him along. After being a standout player at North and helping the Stars to a state championship, he then went to Auburn to play college baseball. He was drafted 3 different times, but the final time was by the Phillies in the 17th round in 2014. Tomczyk spent 6 seasons in minor league baseball, and he hit .273 with 299 RBIs. Quote, "There's nothing really I am pushing for exactly," Tomczyk said. "If I can keep playing and make some money, then I'll do that. I'm getting older. I'm not sad about that. It's life. You have to move on from the stuff you've worked hard on, and you have to push for the next thing." Tomczyk started the season by getting 4 home runs in the first couple weeks of the season, and at that point he tied for the team lead in homers. That was the same roster that housed Delwin Young and Giff Nagopi, who both played in the major leagues. Tomczyk wound up with 32 hits in the 28-game season, and that was good for third in the league. Tomczyk's slash line was .317/.360/.353 with the aces. He had had 54 total bases, fourth among league hitters. Quote, "It was a league I knew that I could have success in," Tomczyk said. Quote, "I wasn't too surprised, honestly." He predominantly played the corner infield positions. Tomczyk started the season at third base when Nagopi was in quarantine to begin the season, but once the South African infielder was raring to go, the Aces moved Tomczyk over to first base. Next, we'll turn to the front again of the sports section, NCAA Women's Basketball, Huskies hamper Hawkeyes. Subheadline, University of Connecticut holds Iowa to quiet fourth quarter. Top-ranked Connecticut simply had too much for the Iowa women's basketball team to handle Saturday at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. Too much strength on the boards, too much balance and flow offensively, and at the end, too much tournament-tested savvy, all contributing to the Hawkeyes' 92-72 loss to the Huskies in the Sweet 16. Quote, "We're a young team. We'll be back there," Iowa coach Lisa Boulder said. "That is what I told our team, not to hang their heads. We are extremely young and we will be back." University of Connecticut ended the Hawkeyes' hopes of moving on by pulling away from a 10-point lead with just over 5 minutes remaining. In an 80-70 game, the Huskies forced 4 turnovers on Iowa's next 6 possessions and collected baskets following the first 2 to end any doubt. A lay-in by Kristen Williams off of an Evina Westbrook steal and a 3-point basket by Anna Maukat left the Hawkeyes in an 85-70 hole with 4 minutes 22 seconds remaining. Another lay-in by Williams, who finished with a game-high 27 points and a jumper by Westbrook, extended the Huskies' lead 89-70 before Caitlin Clark ended a 5.5-minute scoring drought by Iowa with 36 seconds left in the game. Quote, "They did a great job of using the clock and scoring at the end of the shot clock in the final minutes. And we kind of melted down those last 4 or 5 minutes," Boulder said. Quote, "That's the disappointing thing. The final score wasn't indicative of the game." In a matchup featuring 2 of the nation's premier freshmen in Clark and the Huskies' Paige Buechers, both struggled initially, before ultimately leading 4 Hawkeyes in double figures with a 21-point game. Clark connected on just 2 of 11 shots from the field in the first half and had just 7 points. Buechers hit 3 of 6 shots but collected just 6 points as Connecticut built a 49-35 halftime lead. Like Clark, she settled in during the second half and went on to finish with 18 points to help the Huskies finish Iowa's 20-10 season. Quote, the fact there was so my hype put on those two kids. Part of it was unfair, but it comes with the territory. I get that, Huskies coach Geno Auriemma said. But like I told the team before the game, and all these matchups of players that get all the hype, it usually comes down to somebody else and something else. Auriemma sought out Clark following the game, congratulating her on a, quote, crazy good season. Clark said the veteran University of Connecticut coach told her it was a shame that she and Buckers had to deal with the hype, telling her, quote, I could tell you guys were antsy in the first half, which I think is kind of true. I think we felt the pressure, took some poor shots. I think we both have calmed down in the second half. The Hawkeyes found themselves playing from behind throughout much of the game, leading only for 20 seconds after a Gabby Marshall three-point basket in the opening minutes of play. Williams and Westbrook contributed all of the points during a 12-2 run by University of Connecticut, which left Iowa down 12-18 after one quarter. The Huskies hit 12 of 18 shots in the second quarter and to extend their lead to double digits before the half, and the Hawkeyes came no closer than 8 points on two occasions for the rest of the game. By halftime, Connecticut was well on its way to a 42-25 advantage on the boards that included a 14-4 edge in the second chance points created by a 15-7 margin on the offensive glass. The offensive rebounds really hurt us, Blender said. Quote, we did not box out, and at times that had been a theme for us all year. We've got to get better at it. This gives us a lot of good film to show and work on during the offseason. The Hawkeyes also had a few defensive shortcomings exposed. The Huskies recorded 31 assists on their 40 baskets, moving the ball well and foregoing good shots for better shots, leading Connecticut to a 54.8% shooting for the game. Clark said the game illustrated what Iowa needs to work on if it wants to compete with the strongest programs in the country. Quote, we really stayed with them, kept fighting, kept knocking down shots, Clark said. I think if we can clean up a few more things, a couple more shots fall down, a couple more things go away, I think we're right there, a 2-4 point game. Clark led a balanced Iowa attack. In addition to her 21, McKenna Warnock matched a season high with 20 points. Monoka Cinzano finished with 14 and Marshall had 12 while going 4-for-5 from a 3-point range. Blutter praised her team for its growth throughout the season, leading to an 8-3 record in runs to the Big Ten title game and NCAA Sweet 16 in the final weeks of a season that started with no shortage of questions. Quote, I think it was a hard year as far as the pandemic and testing all the time and having those extra responsibilities, not being able to be together at a team functions like we usually are. Blutter said, I am so proud of our young team for navigating all of that. The success will lead to added expectations as Iowa moves forward, a challenge that Clark welcomes. Quote, I think that is something we can feed off the next few seasons down the road, Clark said. I think that's what we're going to work on in the offseason. Look back and what we need to do to improve and then get better at it. All right, now back to the front page of the sports section for Iowa Prep Sports. Headline, quote, we're still in the middle. Subheadline, IHSAA seeks state baseball home, from Sioux City. Tom Keating and the rest of the Iowa High School Athletic Association is on a recon mission this week. Earlier this week, the Cedar Rapids Gazette reported that the Iowa High School baseball tournament will not be held in Des Moines this year because of the Iowa Cubs schedule that was built by Major League Baseball. The tournament is scheduled to be held July 23rd through the 31st. The iCubs are on the road for the 23rd through the 26th, but return home for a 6-game home series against the Louisville Bats. Major League Baseball has taken more control of their minor league system, and the schedules were not built by the Pacific Coast League, the defunct league in which the Iowa Cubs used to play. Keating said that the iCubs general manager Sam Barnaby was very upfront to the IHSAA about what the schedule was going to look like since the MLB now had control. There was talk that maybe the state tournament could be bumped up a week, but Keating remembered how last season was shortened because the COVID-19 breakout and didn't want to shorten the 2021 season. quote, there would be some conference games and conference tournaments that we would get canceled because of that, Keating said Friday in a telephone interview. We just didn't think we could do that to our schools. I understand for the 32 teams that get to state, Principal Park is just a fabulous facility, but we have 300 other schools that are playing baseball, and to shorten their seasons, we just didn't feel good about doing that. So the IHSAA has been on the search for a new place to play the baseball tournament. The IHSAA board meets on April 21st, and that's when the board will ask for approval for the site selected. Quote, we got to get the decisions made, Keating said. We need to let our schools know, and we need to let our workforces know, and we need to let the hosts know so they can put some more workers together as well. He still wants this to be a special event. Keating is looking for places where more than 1,000 fans can come, a place that isn't too far for a team to travel, and simply a nice facility. Fans on Twitter have suggested playing at Merchants Park in Carroll, Veterans Memorial Stadium in Cedar Rapids, Duane Banks Park in Iowa City, and a few small college and high school parks around the state. Fans have also suggested the new ballpark at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, where the Yankees and the White Sox will play in August. Major League Baseball politely told the IHSAA no. We even looked at the Field of Dreams, and as politely as they could, they said, don't even think about getting on that field until the Yankees and White Sox have played their games, Keating said. Keating also heard back from the Cedar Rapids Colonels, who play at Vets, and the Iowa Hawkeyes Banks Parks, and those facilities are not an option for the IHSAA. The Quad Cities River Bandits, who play at Modern Woodman Park in Davenport, are also home during the week of state baseball. So all three current minor league baseball facilities are out of play for the tournament this season. Keating has also looked into using community fields and semi-pro facilities across the state. Quote, we know where ballparks are, Keating said, and so we're reached out and we're still in the middle and we're looking at high school fields. We've looked at some small college fields. Twitter is full of suggestions for us, you know, so we appreciate that, but anything people throw out there, we've probably got in our mix as well. Keating said that there's no time to be disappointed. He just has to move on and find the next best option. Quote, if you worry about disappointment, you're going to be disappointed most of your life, you know, Keating said. We run into a lot of hurdles and a lot of barriers that we've got to overcome. The state track meet is scheduled for May 20th to 22nd at Drake Stadium, but those dates might chance if spectator limitations are significant. Keating and the state expect to have some guidance throughout the next week or so from Drake Stadium directors in terms of how many people can enter in a session. Quote, I wouldn't call anything a major overhaul, but I think we have to try to maximize the opportunity, Keating said. Sometimes I think people feel like we want a lot of fans there, so we sell lots of tickets, and the reality is we want people to see their kids. And when you have all four classes going at the same time, you're splitting tickets, Keating said. So if there are significant capacity limitations, then we might look at a little different schedule. We're not there yet. As far as boys' state soccer tournament goes, the dates are still planned for June 1st, 3rd, and 5th at the James W. Crowney Soccer Park in Des Moines. Keating said similar protocols will be in place for fans as they were in the winter. For example, if an area team is not the first game of a given session, its fans will not be allowed in until the crowd in the preceding game clears the area. Keating believes that state golf and tennis tournaments will not have any fan limitations. Keating appreciated the work that the staff and, more importantly, the fans went through to make sure the state wrestling and boys basketball tournaments were as safe as possible. Keating admitted there had to be several plans in place and that there was extensive work done to make sure the tournaments could be held at the Wells Fargo Arena. Quote, we are lucky that Polk County allowed the Wells Fargo Arena to have the number of fans that we were allowed, Keating said. Our administrators, our coaches, our officials, our athletes kind of proved to us in the summer and fall that they could make it happen. I think the protocols that we were really insistent upon were masks and social distancing, so the pod seating and the masking was a piece that was going to have to happen if we were going to be able to do this. Now let's turn to the business section, or section B of today's Sunday paper. Headline, expanding the campus with COVID funding. Subheadline, Paddle leads Little Priest Tribal College through pandemic challenges. From Winnebago, Nebraska. Manoji Patel likes to say that the gush of emergency funding brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic worked wonders at the Little Priest Tribal College. Quote, people laugh at me when I say this, that this has actually been the best thing for us, Patel said in an interview last month. Quote, and I know it's a weird thing for me to say, but a college has never had this amount of funding ever. Patel, 42, the president of Little Priest, said that the small college has received things they probably would have ordinarily struggled to obtain. Two new buildings, massive upgrades to their classrooms, had it not been for the pandemic funding. While other post-secondary schools dealt with hundreds of infections, Patel said that only six individuals at Little Priest contracted the virus. Quote, we got tremendous funding from the CARES Act, COVID funding, and we are delighted, Patel said. The college is anticipating even more money after the passage of the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan this month, perhaps as much as $8 million from the Department of Education and the Department of the Interior, on top of money from last year. Little Priest plans to use the latest funding to develop a 10-acre parcel adjacent to the campus, which is owned by the Winnebago Tribe, into more buildings and campus space. The tribe is expected to be transfer the land to the college soon. If and when that happens, Patel has said plans are at the ready. In parentheses, the Winnebago Tribe is one of the college's main supporters, and the tribe selects the college's board of trustees, who have to be members of the tribe. Developing the 10 acres, making the campus sustainably larger, is a major element of Patel's 5-year plan for Little Priest. He wants to add a student center, a new cafeteria, and other building on that land, possibly including a wellness center. Mostly things that would boost the quality of life for students, thus boosting enrollment. Quote, that's where we're going to grow the campus, he said. The 25-year-old college in Winnebago got a new dormitory and a new IT building in the closing months of 2020, thanks largely to various stimulus measures. They now have a total of 9 buildings, including a building in the Village Market for community workshops and classes. The new dormitory was being used by 12 Clans Unity Hospital earlier this year as overflow for individuals and families in quarantine and isolation. By the fall, the dorm is expected to be used for student housing rather than as an ancillary medical facility. Patel, who was born in India and immigrated to the U.S. in 2001, joined the faculty of Western Iowa Tech Community College as a chemistry teacher in September of 2002. In August of 2018, he became vice president at Little Priest, then was promoted to interim vice president in November of 2019. He was named president of the college last April in the middle of the pandemic's harsh early phase. Quote, I remember March 16th, 2020, we had to go completely online, and just like many other colleges and universities and schools, nobody's ready for an online instruction, especially for our student population. They like to have the face-to-face interaction, Patel said, snapping his fingers to indicate how abruptly the change was made. Quote, I can only imagine what the students went through. Initially, remote learning did not work perfectly. A significant segment of students did not have internet access at their homes, and roughly 25% took an incomplete grade or dropped out of their courses. It appeared that some of them assumed that in-person learning would resume during the summer semester. Quote, honestly speaking, the online instruction is not for everybody, Patel said. In the summer, after the school received CARES funding, Act funding, and money from the American Indian College Fund, Little Priest got to work repairing some of the issues that had plagued them in the spring. Students now receive laptop computers from the college and have their internet bills paid for by the college. Paycheck Protection Program funds, meanwhile, enabled the college to retain its 50 employees. Quote, that's why I'm grateful for the CARES Act funding and the COVID funding. Without that, I do not know where we would be, Patel said. The school also gets funding from the U.S. Department of Education and from the Bureau of Indian Education. Quote, thank God for these two agencies, Patel said. Existing classrooms also got substantial upgrades. They're now outfitted with HyFlex video technology, which Patel spoke about at length. The $200,000 HyFlex system of cameras, video screens, and microphones makes for a much neater online learning experience for students. They can see the classroom's whiteboard on their computer screens as if they were directly in front of them and readily ask questions of the instructor. Quote, it's an amazing technology, Patel said. Classes are present being taught partly online, partly face-to-face, partly hybrid, and partly HyFlex. Patel anticipates a return to normal in-person classes by the summer, though he also said that HyFlex will likely remain a part of the mix. Little Priest now has students as far away as Utah and Arizona taking online classes. The college's enrollment this year dipped slightly to 113, compared to 121 last year. Patel said that Little Priest's decision to suspend its athletic program through fall 2022 likely played a role in that. 85% of the students are Native Americans, and the overwhelming majority of the student population is eligible for Pell Grants and other financial aid. Students seldom have out-of-pocket costs. This year, Little Priests began facilitating tuition-free dual-credit courses for Nebraska high school students so that they can earn course credits through the college. Were it not for that, Paddle said, enrollment figures would likely be under 100. Enrollment at Little Priests has been remarkably steady over the years, Paddle said. He made a long flatline gesture with his arm when describing the size of the student population over time, but he has plans to change that. Quote, I see that as an opportunity and a concern, Paddle said. The concern is why it's not going up. The opportunity is we have a lot of room to grow right now. Little Priest officials have been actively working to engage other colleges and universities in quote articulation agreements to add new programs, whereby the coursework in certain subjects are shared between colleges to some extent. Under these agreements, Little Priest students can readily transfer those to those schools to complete a four-year degree and beyond if they so wish. Perhaps most intriguingly, Little Priest has added a new quote cannabis studies program starting in the fall through an articulation agreement with the Doane University in Crete, Nebraska, wherein students learn how to grow and tend to cannabis plants, how to maintain a hemp farm, and extract the THC and CBD from marijuana. With the addition of the cannabis program, Little Priest will offer a total of 7 majors. They're also trying to put together programs in agricultural science, business, and chemistry. They're hoping to offer 10 programs by the fall of 2022. Quote, and I think it's a very realistic goal, Paddle said, adding that there's no reason to expect enrollment to grow much if there is no new programs being added. All right, and that brings us to the end of today's Sioux City Journal for Iris for Sunday, March 28th. Just giving a quick recap of the weather. Today we can expect sunshine, a high of 61. Low tonight will be clear with a low of 44. Monday, sunny, windy, and warmer, high of 73, low of 34. It's Tuesday, to be cooler, breezy in the morning, high of 47, low of 22. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high of 49, low of 26. And Thursday, sunny, pleasant, and milder, high of 58, low of 38. So again, that's Iris for the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, March 28th. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Goodbye and take care. Bye-bye.